The 2020 election party is in full swing. In addition to the President of the United States, all 435 U.S. House seats are up for grabs, as are 35 U.S. Senate seats, 13 governorships, and thousands of state legislative seats. Just over 250 million Americans are eligible to vote, but if the past predicts the future, only 56% of us will make it to the polls in November. Young people typically have the lowest voter turnout, while voters 65 and older show up at the polls more often than any other age group. Women vote at higher rates than men. Voter turnout among Black women is especially high and exceeds the national average. Latinos have the highest percentage of eligible voters among minority groups, and New Mexico is the state with the largest share of eligible Latino voters. But in the past, national Latino turnout has lagged behind many other groups. In today's report, I'm talking with Dina Bunis, who is a senior writer and editor with AARP, the nation's leading advocate for older Americans. She is the author of recent elections reports for AARP. We should note here that AARP does not endorse candidates or parties. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you, Mary Lou. Glad to be here.
Let's begin our discussion by talking about the primary caucus season we're smack in the middle of right now. In your recent guide to 2020 primary voting, you disabuse us of the notion that states simply have two different ways of selecting delegates to the national political conventions, caucuses or primaries. All caucuses are not alike. All primaries are not alike. Help our listeners understand the variations on these two kinds of election processes.
You're right that there are very different ways that states decide how they're going to choose a nominee for president. Basically, the way it boils down to are variations of closed and open primary. A closed primary is one in which only people registered in that party can vote in that primary. Some of them are what we call partially closed, where at the beginning of an election season, a political party is able to designate and say, we're going to allow, for example, independent voters to get a ballot for our primary. Then there are open ones. For example, one of the Super Tuesday ones in Virginia was an open primary. So anyone registered to vote in that state could go and vote in that state's Democratic primary. And then there are what they call partially open primaries, and those also allow people who were not registered in that party to vote, but they have to publicly state which ballot they want and say, I want a Democratic primary ballot or a Republican primary ballot. There are also variations among the states as to when you have to have registered. Some require registration certain number of days or weeks or even months before the primary. Some have same-day registration. You can go and register to vote on that same day that the primary is being held.
These contests are well underway right now. Help us understand, after the voting or the caucus closes and the votes are tallied, how do you decide what proportion of a state's delegates a singular representative would get?
Now you're talking about delegate math, and that is something that one usually can scratch one's head and get very confused about. But there's a magic number. The magic number for the Democrats is 1991, and that is the number of delegates that a nominee needs in order to be the victorious at the convention and run as the Democratic standard bearer. And there are three different ways that those delegates are tallied up. One is statewide. So if you get more than 15% of the statewide vote, you will get some delegates. Then you go to the congressional districts. If you get more than 15% in a particular particular congressional district, even if you don't make the statewide threshold of 15%, you'll still get some delegates. And then going into the convention, there are what are called superdelegates. Those have been pretty controversial over the years because they're made up of party leaders, what used to be called party elders. There are fewer of them this year in the convention. And they also will not have any power until and unless there's a second ballot. So what happens is that the convention delegates are divvied up, and actually the delegates themselves are not picked until local conventions on a statewide basis where people are actually named to go to Milwaukee and cast their ballot for their candidate.
Now, help us understand, because several candidates dropped out. What will happen to those delegates if the candidates have already dropped out by the time the vote has been counted?
That's a really interesting question, because these candidates, as you noticed, both Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, they did not drop out, quote-unquote, of the race. They suspended their campaigns.
Good point.
And that is kind of a term of art that's used, that by suspending their campaigns, they preserved their delegates.
Ah.
So what will happen if there is a contested convention is those delegates will still officially be pledged to those two candidates, for example, but because they will not be likely nominated as candidates, those candidates, Klobuchar and Buttigieg, will ask their supporters, as they have done in the past few days, they will ask their supporters to please support another one of the candidates, in this case, former Vice President Joe Biden. But from a legal party standpoint, these delegates are free agents. They can listen to their former candidates, or they can choose to support someone else. And if this all gets to a second ballot, then all pledged bets are off, and these delegates are there to exercise their power as delegates and vote for whom they want.
Let's turn to older voters, which AARP is one of the experts on. Are you tracking older voter patterns during this caucus and primary season? And if you are, what are you finding?
Yes, we have been. We have had voter engagement campaigns in earnest in the four early primary states. And what we're finding is what has historically been the case, that older voters vote, and they vote more than their younger counterparts. For example, in the Nevada caucuses, 55% of those voting were over the age of 50. In South Carolina, it was 62% over 50 who voted, and in New Hampshire, it was 57%. So older voters have historically and are continuing to be a largest demographic cohort of the electorate.
Well, that moves us right into my next question, which is you predict, AARP predicts, that older voters will actually dominate the 2020 elections. Why do you say that, and what matters to older voters, and does this differ from the voting population generally?
Well, I say that because of history. In 2018, for example, which was an off-year election, a midterm election, where generally turnout goes down, 66% of people over 65 and 60% of people 45 to 64 voted. That contrasted with fewer than half of all registered voters going to the polls. It was still a large number of people voting in an off-year election, but older voters, as I said, have consistently been tuned to the elections. They're attuned to the elections early. They care about the issues. And they voted their whole lives, and this is not a choice for them. This is not something that they have to decide. It's election time. I'm going to go vote. That's what our constituency tells us, and the numbers bear that out.
So you're saying that issues matter to this voting group of older Americans. How important is party to them?
I did some reporting in two of the primary states this year. I was in Nevada and I was in South Carolina, and interviewed many older voters, a lot of AARP members and volunteers. And I didn't hear one of them talk about party. I heard them talk about issues that were important to them and concerns over ethics and trust of the leaders they elect. But party never seemed to enter into our conversation.
That's really interesting. Now, the Harris Poll recently conducted a survey for AARP that highlights, in particular, older women voters. Briefly tell us about that poll and what does it mean for election 2020?
Yes, we conducted both a national poll that was of women and men, and then we conducted polls of women only in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. And we got what, for me, was a startling statistic, that 95% of women age 50-plus told us that they were going to vote, that this is a really important election for them. And the other thing I found out...
Now, this is all women, or are we just saying older women?
No, women 50-plus.
Okay.
The cohort that we've surveyed were women age 50 and over.
Okay.
And 95% of them told us that they were going to go to the polls and vote. But what was also interesting was when this survey was done is that there was a very high percentage of undecided.
Mm.
So it showed that the electorate was still really interested in learning more about the candidates and that they hadn't made up their minds. Almost a third of the women that we surveyed had, you know, only a third had made up their mind about who they were going to support.
And did the poll tell you in particular which issues mattered to older women?
Yes, over and above all other issues, health care.
Hmm.
And that has been consistent with polls that we've done and polls that have been done across the country. It's the ability to afford health care, and particularly the ability to afford prescription drugs. The runaway cost of prescription drugs has been a huge issue. AARP has been waging for the past year a campaign that we call Stop Rx Greed to convince lawmakers both at the federal and state level that they have to do something about getting the cost of prescription drugs down. And we heard that loud and clear in the polls.
Now, we have previously said that AARP does not endorse parties or candidates, but you're now just explaining to us that they do make stands on issues. Where does AARP stand on Medicare for All?
We have a more general approach to our support for health care. We want to ensure that the affordable health insurance that is available to Americans now is not taken away from them. We have fought particularly hard to make sure that people who have pre-existing conditions are able to get the insurance and the coverage they need, and that older Americans do not disproportionately have to pay more for health care than younger Americans. But we haven't come out in support of or against any one of the Medicare for All proposals.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about older voters and the 2020 elections?
Just that one of the things that we think that candidates on all levels need to be concerned about is that they need to pay attention to older voters. They ignore the senior vote at their peril. These are people who not only have influence over their own vote, but they have influence over their families, over their children, over their grandchildren. And the issues that older voters care about are intergenerational. Healthcare is something that is concerning to all generations, and that, you know, the candidates really need to listen to this voting cohort because this is an important group of people.
Thanks very much, Dina Bunis with the National Office of AARP. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper.